Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 88, Episode 4 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist,
a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, hey, fuck Coke Industries and fuck Fox News. It's Thursday, June 27th, 2019. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I won't deny it. I am Jack O'Brien. You don't want to fuck with me. Got the pod hosting with Miles G, but they can't fuck with TDZ. Yeah, that is courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi, man. And I am thrilled to be joined by today's acting co-host, Mr. Nick Stump.
He stump. He's in my head.
Woo!
That is courtesy of Jack Potatoes O'Brien.
Stump, he's in my headphones. That's right. He's coming right at you, ladies and gentlemen. Nick, it's great to have you on this side of the glass.
Thank you for having me.
This is not what I expected you to look like, but yeah, good nonetheless. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by another podcaster here who the two of us have worked with, the very talented and hilarious Katie Golden.
Yep, it's me.
Yeah, good one. How's it going, Katie?
Pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're the host of a show, Creature Feature, I'm told?
That's right.
Is that
You've
right?
been on my show. Why are you acting
okay,
so
sorry.
Coy?
Not coy. I was just very drunk when I was
I
on.
I see.
But yeah.
I like to liquor up my guests.
Yeah, that's true.
Get them limber.
Yeah, you can't talk about nature without a couple drinks in you, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Katie, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment, but first, we're going to tell our listeners a few of the things we're talking about, like that Kim Kardashian just trademarked the word kimono for her new line of shapewear. We're going to talk about that. I don't see why anyone would have a problem with that, but we'll just check in with it just in case. Charmin has put out a forever roll of toilet paper, so that's good for all of us, I think. Trump just said he's glad John McCain is dead and he hopes he rots in hell. Not in those words exactly. Mueller is going to testify. We're getting excited about that. We're going to check in with what the Republicans are thinking about the Democratic field, what some Republican strategists are thinking, and then what one Mr. Tucker Carlson thinks of one of the candidates. And just real quick, wanted to say that we are going to be covering last night's and tonight's Democratic debates on tomorrow's episode. So if you tuned in for that, turn it off. I don't want you to expect any sort of insight into anything political from these two dummies. Sorry, guys. But first, Katie, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Probably Wolverine Frog Harry question mark.
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Yes. Did Google.
Yeah, other things like I'm a very curious person. There's like dog bladder stones, big pictures, pictures of big ones.
You just put in pictures of big ones into your Google.
Well, that auto-filled for me.
pictures of, yeah, we know, Katie, pictures of big ones.
Pictures of big ones.
So wait, the hairy Wolverine frog, is that the one that like breaks its bone through its arm?
Yes. Yeah. I actually just talked to Soren Bowie about that on the latest episode of Creature Feature, which you can listen to. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you have the capacity to listen to that one, too.
Yeah, you should. It's
I'm not trying to be passive aggressive about it. I'm not being like, you know, like, hey, like if you can listen to this, I mean.
You sound a little frustrated now.
Couldn't you just listen to. But yeah, it's a frog who will give itself compound fractures to use his Wolverine claws. And they also have weird skin hairs. It's really cool. I won't say any more about it. You'll just have to listen to that dang old podcast, won't you?
Mm. So I, even if I asked you more questions about it, you would just refuse. Okay.
Yeah.
Bold move. What is something you think is underrated?
So there's this thing that I've known about for quite a while called hydrocolloidal band-aids, and they are great. I love them for blisters, for pimples. They're just... Recently, I've seen them being marketed as like these kind of frou-frou things on Amazon where it's like, oh, these incredible new like blemish-stopping technology. And it's like, no, you can just go to CVS and get much cheaper ones there.
Oh, okay.
And big, like bigger ones. And they're great. Like I get my feet are very sensitive to getting just awful, horrible
acne.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, big old blisters. Foot and knee. So I just wanted the people to know that you don't have to spend a bunch of money on like luxury hydrocolloidal band-aids. They already exist in the store.
What do they look like? What would I?
Looks like a box of band-aids, but it says that they're hydrocolloidal on the box. They'll be with like the other band-aids, but they do look, they're weird because they're kind of gross because like if you put it on some sort of weeping wound, they'll like absorb the fluids like a sponge, and then like you pull it off and it's just like,
excuse me.
Nick is vomiting violently into a trash basket.
I don't know why. I think I just chose this one because I like saw some ad for like these things. It's like, no, those already exist. And I just don't listen. I'm doing my part. So that you don't go and like buy some kind of fancy
high-end beauty product that you could get for $3 and a library card. am I right? Goodwill Hunting.
Anyone else? All right.
So is it the little band-aids for like corns and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They look.
And you can put that on acne and it treats the acne?
I mean, it really depends. I don't want to say it depends on your skin type. Some people are sensitive to adhesive. I am certainly that kind of person, so I have to be careful using it for acne. But if you know, don't pick at your acne, but if like you have like a blemish. Okay, Nick, we're adults here. Yeah. We're adults with acne here.
What if my corns have acne? Then?
Oh, yeah. Well, then, I mean, you got to lose the foot.
Yeah.
There's no saving that foot.
Yeah.
You just put them on. And what they do is they just like they help dry out the blemish. So, it's real nasty.
Interesting.
But cool.
That's a good hack.
Good old
life hacks with
good old
Katie.
Life hacks. But it's also good for like if you get like a like I've used them on paper cuts where it's really hard to kind of you know just like getting a regular Band-Aid when you put it on your hand it gets all wet and there's no worse
the smell
feeling.
Of it too, you know.
just
feeling,
a smelly wound. Am I right, guys?
The feeling of a wet Band-Aid on your finger after washing the dishes is maybe the worst thing that has ever happened to me.
Wow. Things are good.
And I've had a rough life.
Things are good. Well, Katie, what is something you think is overrated?
This was a lot easier for me to answer, which says a lot about me, but I have...
You're such an internet troll.
Can I just read you a list of choices that I wrote down, and then you can select which one you want me to talk about?
Please.
I wrote down Thomas Friedman, centrists, horseshoe theory, and then French tuck.
I don't know what the French tuck is, so it's all probably right. not worth knowing, so we're going to put that one out immediately. Horseshoe theory, I'm assuming, is some sort of strategy for playing the game of horseshoes.
Yes.
And so let's go with centrists. Why are centrists underrated?
Pick a side,
or
guys.
Overrated?
Pick a side. Come on.
Nice.
Come on.
Enough said. Just like a playground
I'm
tease.
Sort of irritated by it's specifically about the current dialogue in the country where it's like people want a sensible centrist candidate. It's like, no, they absolutely don't. Have you seen the world right now? Have you seen, like, the current, dare I say it, the zeitgeist of the day?
Yeah. That's actually just an automated feature we have put in anytime somebody says zeitgeist.
I see you guys have gotten a soundboard since I've been here.
Dan, I just said zeitgeist. You have to, if you're playing with the thing. Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Very slow motion. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. About centrists.
But let me tell you about French tuck. Hang on.
Yes, French tuck. What is it?
I learned about this on the new, the Queer Eye show, which is great. Great show. But and they do the French tuck on this show, and it looks really good. It's like, oh, you can tuck your shirt in partially, and it looks nice and fashionable. And I'm like, oh, great. They look so good. I try it. It always makes me look so dumb. I cannot do it without looking like a total idiot who, like, got half-dressed and, like, walked out the door. And
what is a French tuck? What is
it? Oh, sorry. A French tuck is when you partially tuck in your shirt.
Just the front?
Just the front, and then you kind of, like...
Rakishly?
Tuck it. Yeah, rakishly tuck it in, and you kind of, like, half-pull it out and just, like, let it drape around you. And somehow on the show, they do it in a way it's like, that looks great. If you try it at home, you will look... so fucking stupid.
Wow.
Stylists love to do that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And somehow when they do it, it looks great. But then I do it on myself, and it's just like, I look...
Yeah, it's like...
I look like I went to the bathroom and was wiping and then got my shirt stuck in my butt or something and like went out of the bathroom and I was like...
Well, are you choosing that specific place to tuck it in?
Partially tuck it in the back, in the middle of the back.
And like violently. So it looks like your shirt's like tugging.
You just gotta force it in there.
All right. That's good to know. And horseshoe theory, was that right? That it's a...
It's measuring the wind speed velocity of which way your horseshoes are going. No,
I've always said you got to take it to the horseshoe. You know, you got to take it to your opponent. I'm a very offensive-minded horseshoe.
This is Thomas Friedman who came up with this theory.
No, no, these are all unrelated. I hate a lot
She's
of things.
Mad about. Mad don't about even get her started on Thomas Friedman. Start the clock.
Problem Thomas Friedman is he uses mixed metaphors. Anyways.
Really?
Yeah, he's a writer for the New York Times.
Oh, I know who he is.
He uses mixed metaphors a lot. He's like saying, he was talking about something where you got on an airplane. He's like we were like a herd of carnivores hunting for a seat. It's like, carnivores don't form herds, you dingus.
Right, yeah.
Can't mix your metaphors like that.
Yeah, I would have caught that too.
Yeah.
Wait, no, they never? Oh yeah, I guess they don't, right?
No. No, that's
predators
aren't herds. If you could say a pride of lions, but you wouldn't say
a herd
of lions.
But they just hang out.
Yeah.
Okay. Pack.
A pack is a good term too, but no.
Thomas Friedman, one of the first books I ever listened to on tape was The World is Flat. He says the world is flat. Like every sentence of that book. He's like, the reason the world is flat is one of the most poorly written books I've ever
read. I hate to put old Friedman on blast here, but like he is able to write the most words without actually saying anything of anyone I've ever seen.
What are his qualifications?
I don't know.
I've always wondered that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think he must have, the thing is, it must be that he had some interesting articles, some interesting things to say early in his career, and then they just kept wanting him to keep going, but he ran out of material. But they're like, we need a new article, and
He strikes me as like the equivalent of like a tenured professor who just like doesn't need to do shit.
Right.
He's the guy who wrote the opinion piece about MBS being like a cool dude who we hung out with and he has like lots of like fresh ideas. And he's like, hey, don't take it from me, but this guy is cool, kids.
He loves talking
you're
about
welcome,
how...
ladies.
Exactly.
He loves talking about like he just has a constant boner for technological advancement where he's like, the world is now flat because of iPods and Twitter is going to solve the Middle East.
Right. And he was talking about like the Zoomies over in India, this new generation of kids who zoom around and or Zippies. I forget what he talked about. He was like, guys, trust me, 5 years from now, you will be laughing that you didn't know what I was talking about when I said the Zippies from India. OK, and it's like this book came out in 2004. It's like none of this shit caught on, man. He's the worst. He's one of the only, like, normally I would stop reading immediately, but this was like a cross-country trip my wife and I were on, and this was like back when you actually like had books on tape, and so like we had like the CD.
Who narrated it?
I forget, but it was like 8 CDs, and so we just like had to like grind through this terrible book the whole way, and that was my ex-wife. We're not together anymore because of that experience.
Oh, no.
What is a myth? What's something people think is true you know to be false?
Well, I actually just did this because I was researching an article, there's not really such a thing as hypoallergenic dogs. There's low shedding dogs. And this is actually kind of news to me. I thought that hypoallergenic dogs actually would produce less dander, but I don't think that's actually the case. So dogs who are considered hypoallergenic just either don't shed or shed less. I mean, all dogs shed to some extent, but like they shed less. And how that's supposed to help with allergies is that dander, which contains a protein, which is what people are actually allergic to. It's this protein produced in dog's skin. It's in their saliva. That will stick to the hair and then get around. And that could potentially trigger allergies. But I read a study and they found that homes in which they had hypoallergenic dogs actually had the same amount of detectable allergens when they studied it. But they didn't say, like, oh, that means that hypoallergenic dogs don't help. It just means that there's still the allergen around. But it's possible that the fur getting everywhere, like getting stuck to you, could trigger your allergies more.
Right.
So that may be why. So I don't actually know. I feel like maybe it's helpful. Like, if you have mild allergies, it's probably helpful.
Right. Now, you came in today. You're caked in dog fur.
Yes.
I'm just joking. but that totally makes sense to me. And I've only ever heard people talk about other dogs, like theoretically. They're like, oh, is that dog hypoallergenic?
Right.
Like, I'm allergic to dogs. I never believe people when they say they're allergic to stuff. I've just always call their bluff.
Someone's got like a nut allergy and their face
exactly.
is purple. It's like, walk it off.
Walk it off. Indeed. Let's talk about Kim Kardashian, you guys.
Aw, yeah.
She trademarked a few weeks ago the word kimono, and she just revealed why. It's her new line of shapewear.
She should have trademarked the word shapewear.
Yeah. Nike's 5 steps ahead of her on that one, bud.
First time hearing of it.
Really?
Yeah, I've never heard the word shapewear before.
What do you wear underneath today? Your clothes to make your figure look that good?
Spanx.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Spanx wear.
Spanx is shapewear.
Yeah. Okay, right.
But yeah, so
I thought it was like Kleenex where you...
I think the problem most people are having with this is that she is spelling it exactly the same way that English people, that the word kimono is spelled in English. It's like a traditional, you know, Japanese form of clothing. We'll get Miles' thoughts on this when he gets back. But for now, it's still fucked up. So we wanted to call it out. But yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, cultural appropriation in a really poorly thought through way.
Well, in the worst way, right? Because you're literally, it's like when other, like say, you know, it's, I certainly can't necessarily make a determination on this because I am, full disclosure, I'm white, but I feel like, you know, if you're going to culturally appropriate something, don't literally steal it so everybody else can't use that word.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
No, like most people under the age of 18 now are confused when they hear the word kimono because Kim Kardashian is a big deal to people under 18. I'm hip. I'm up on the kids. But yeah, I mean, it's generally she created a homophone overnight that is going to confuse people when it comes to that term.
Now, because she's like trademark, does that mean like other people can't sell stuff called kimonos?
Yeah. Now, I would, if I were her PR, I would advise her not to start suing every Japanese person who uses the word kimono. That would probably not be a good idea. But yeah, I mean, people are just, I don't think that's the concern that people won't be able to do it. I think the best description I read of it was somebody just saying it dilutes the culture a little bit.
Right.
Like it's not like a outright attack that is making people feel like active pain in the moment, but it just kind of cheapens the culture and dilutes a word that is important to the culture. And it's just a kind of thoughtless, shitty thing to do.
Right. I mean, I think that there can be things like cultural appropriation and you know, racism where it's not like, it doesn't have to be an earth-shattering thing, but to still just feel crappy and to be bad, you know?
Yeah.
When people complain, they're not saying that she's literally committing a war crime. They're saying that she's doing something that's kind of shitty and not very respectful.
But what else are you going to call it? I mean, what could you call it?
Well,
really?
Well,
kimono.
I mean, come
right.
on. Because what else could you possibly call it?
Wait, it's a pun on her name. I just got that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're like, never mind. This is total
that's fine.
Fair
that's
game.
Great.
Fair game.
What a good what a great joke.
But yeah,
wow.
It's a she definitely noticed at
Sorry.
A young oh, and then the trending hashtag on Twitter was Kim Oh No.
Oh God, so that's so
that
good though. I mean, okay, yeah. I understand years and years of you know, like cultural sort of bias and the exotification of other cultures, and that's all bad. But think of the puns, you
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
Such a good, wow.
She's
so good.
Picture of I just found she's got her Kimrose in, too.
Her Kimrose?
Yeah.
What are those?
No, just cornrows.
Cornrows. Oh, okay.
Does she, what?
yeah, I saw some people suggesting other ideas for what she should have called it, and they all made sense, but they weren't as good as kimono.
Right.
But there's not a rule that says you have to put your name in the product or the brand you're creating.
So. That's where you're wrong, Jack.
yeah.
Also, but so it's shapewear, right?
Yes.
I don't think kimonos do have that sash, which is I'm sort of assuming that's kind of what she's hinting at. You know, there's that
yeah.
the sash that goes around and kind of cinches in the waist, but that's not called a kimono.
Right. That oh, it's not?
No,
the
I mean I just
one with the sash is not?
Yeah. I just well no, the whole thing is called
Oh, got it.
But
no, I'm pretty sure this is just her knowing that Japan is cool. Japanese
right.
culture is cool.
Very marketable.
Yeah, very marketable right now. So hot
that was,
right
that
now.
That was a joke, guys. I'm not.
and that her name is Kim, and mm-hmm. the word kimono has her name in it. Like that's and
yeah.
kimono equals clothes.
And also, yeah. maybe she knew that this was going to happen, and she's you know.
Yeah, I mean, shit. She probably.
I mean, haven't there been accusations of that in the past with us, like? You know, when people do those ridiculous things, you can't believe they're doing it. You know, like some incredibly racist T-shirt and like a Target ad or something. And you're
right.
like, somebody must have just, this is like a super cynical play for just clicks and people to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because here we are talking about it.
And I mean, you know, who would know that better than somebody whose career started with a sex tape? You
yeah,
know?
I mean,
it's
exactly.
like, oh no, my sex tape is out.
Whoopsies.
Kimono.
Yeah.
Did I drop this sex tape right directly into the inbox of the National Enquirer?
Of the internet. Yeah, that's how the internet works, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of better names. One of them would be Kim Squeeze, like kimchi, but Kim Squeeze.
Kim Squeeze.
That's a good one, right?
Kim Squeeze.
Yeah.
yeah. No, it's great.
It's actually
I feel like the only like the way for her to dispel the notion that this was just a cynical way to get clicks would be for her to change it to Kim Squeeze.
Yeah.
Or change it to something. It needs to be changed. Yeah. Also, kimono is, I recently heard a business person be like, yeah, we had a real open your kimonos moment where we just open the kimonos and
it's nasty.
All right, let's just all open our kimonos and show
just
what
put
we're
all
working
our dicks
with
on the table.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
what the hell does that mean?
It means like
I'm not hiding anything.
Being open, yeah, like not hiding anything.
Could
but
you
it's,
not? I wish that they wouldn't have like that sort of.
But how else are you going to describe it?
I don't know. Exactly. What I would do is like, let's have a real like sort of just open up the butt cheeks, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just
spread
it's
your
basically
butt cheeks.
The same.
A real spread the cheeks moment.
Show each other our assholes.
Inner asshole.
real.
Right up in there.
Real pinch that beehole moment.
I like that way better.
Yeah.
Spread the cheeks moment. But so kimono for me is already has a douchey business kind of connotation to it, a commotation to it.
What?
The kimotation?
Kimotation.
Oh, my God.
Kimonotation. Right, we're going to take a quick break so Katie can stop rolling on the ground laughing from my kimonotation.
My sides.
We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market
as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And yeah, I did. Probably the listeners were wondering that very same thing. Why, like, where was the bomb drop after Kimonotation? And yeah, it's probably the button's probably stuck. Dan wouldn't confirm it, but we can all agree. Let's talk about the fact that Donald Trump yesterday, we talked on yesterday's show about how cultural executives, media executives are worried that we're going through a Trump slump. And maybe Donald Trump is too, because he's saying some wild shit. And he might have pulled a Samuel L. Jackson, A Time to Kill, in saying, I'm glad John McCain is dead and I hope he rots in hell. Because so he was speaking about why he didn't kill Obamacare and pass like his much totally better version. And he said, quote, we needed 60 votes and we had 51. And sometimes we had a hard time with a couple people. Fortunately, they're gone now. They've gone on to greener pastures, or perhaps far less green. But they're gone. Very happy they're gone. Which would seem to be him saying that he is glad John McCain is dead, and greener pastures evoking like the afterlife, and then far less green evoking hell, and him being happy that he's in hell.
I mean, maybe it's like he's saying though the pastures are, they're not green, but like they're eco-conscious because you can't waste water.
Right.
So now they're sort of like desert-scaped pastures. So they're more of a kind of taup and other
drought resistant like, kind of thing.
Drought resistant
pastures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably what he meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. But this is what he's very entertaining when he wants to be. And just such a bad person and totally oblivious to what a bad person he is and unwilling to admit it. And
well, you can this tone, I always think when you read quotes like this, you can picture him doing this exact tone with like a like at a cocktail party where he's wearing tuxedos and be like, I talked to Donald Trump, like kind of an asshole, but it was pretty funny.
Right.
Like we had this 5-minute conversation and he's like a playground jerk off that's kind of funny to hang like see at a party.
Yeah.
And that's the tone of all this kind of stuff. And he's been doing it for 50 years and he's like, well, why would I stop now? It's been going great.
It's like the golden parachute mobster tone where it's like,
right.
My daddy was a criminal.
Right.
Kind of tone of voice, like, oh, maybe he should, he's like in greener pastures now, or should I say hotter pastures?
Right.
right. Everybody laughs because you're a billionaire and
scary. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, you're so funny. Please don't ruin my life.
Right. Yeah. It was announced yesterday or 2 days ago that Robert Mueller is going to testify publicly after there was question whether he would testify even privately in front of Congress. Now, seems like he's going to testify in a public session in front of Congress. And yeah, I don't know. During his press conference, he said he didn't want to testify and that his report is his testimony. And I think people are underplaying how important this could be to have him say what's in the report in front of a huge TV audience, because he was like, my report is my testimony. So
right. But nobody reads. I think that's the thing that seems to have been lost on him is that, A, nobody reads,
right,
and they're not going to read your 400-page report.
Right.
And B, that he seemed to have assumed that there's going to be similarly honorable people after him in the chain. Like, all I have to do is set this up in the way that I know how, and the people, the similarly capable people, will see it and be like, okay, this is obviously what you meant. This is obviously the roadmap to Congress. This is obviously what the intention of this is. This man is guilty of all sorts of things. Here's the evidence. You guys take care of it.
Yeah.
But neither of those things are true. So now where we're at now, he needs to be on TV on camera saying, yes, if he was not president, I would have prosecuted him. Yes. You know,
yeah.
If we have a video of him saying that, then suddenly it's a different kind of thing.
Maybe,
potentially.
Maybe. I, I'm a little more cynical. I think that there's just not going to be really a pants down moment, a spread your cheeks moment.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to have a, you know, open the kimonos.
Right. I think that there it goes.
That's not what it's for.
All right, great. It's working again.
I think it's kind of going to be one of these things where it's like a bunch of little paper cut kind of things where it's like, yeah, he did this thing that's like kind of, you know, not explicitly legal or like, you know, just, but I don't think there's going to be a big reveal. I mean, obviously there's not because we do have access to the report, but there's not, I don't know if there's going to be something that really sort of shakes people to their core. It's like it reveals anything about Trump we don't already know, that he's a, you know, he's a corrupt person. And I'm always frustrated with the whole Mueller report thing, because I feel like if we had gone after him on like the emoluments violations, that is so much more, I guess, specific to his administration, that are so much more flagrant and ridiculous than they have been, there would have been potentially more of a pants down, balls out, butt spread moment.
Yeah.
Aren't they still going after the emolument stuff, though?
I don't know. It's working its way through some court.
Right.
But I think that with a lot of the focus being on the Russia stuff, which it doesn't seem like there's not as strong of a case.
I think that's what Nancy Pelosi's whole point is. Like, we have much stronger cases in all these other lanes, so let's not hang our hat on this Mueller stuff, because we're going to get brick-walled in the Senate anyway.
Yeah, right. I think it should just be common practice that for any president, they get investigated on everything they do, and that we hold them to a very high standard, and that we should be looking into. I think that it's good to investigate, but I think there's just like desire, I think, for there to be a moment where Mueller gets up there and says like, yeah, he sucked Putin off, and we got the video of it.
Things about it, though, that
you
are
think
left
that's
to...
going to happen. Sorry, just real quick. Yeah. I just want to make sure you're going on the record saying you think that is what's going to happen at the Mueller.
That's
and that it's not going to be a big deal.
That's almost
exactly what you
the
said?
Opposite of what I said.
But, sorry. Okay. Nick, what were you saying?
Oh, just that I think in the problem with the Mueller report was just that it left certain things up to interpretation and spin from
right.
The way he put it, which is legally speaking exactly how he had to put it, because he's hamstrung every which way by the regulations of the Justice Department. But the fact that he couldn't just say like things like, yes, if he was not a sitting president, any other person, same charges.
Right.
This is a list of crimes.
Right.
Like, to come out and just bark that out.
Right.
That's the reason for the test. And then allows Trump and people with less imagination to be like, see, I'm not guilty.
Right.
Whereas if you have him on camera saying, yes,
he
committed crimes. The only reason I did not
do
this is because I'm not allowed to by the rules of my personal job.
I mean, I would certainly hope that people would find that alarming. I think that one of the frustrating things with this report is there's this sort of like trickle truth. I think people were expecting a smoking gun of, you know, Trump met with Russians to plot the overthrow of the U.S., which, you know, I mean, the practice of like contacting foreign countries to dig up dirt, I think that's not that unheard of.
Right.
So it's like that's sort of a so we get these kind of little this trickle of information about like, oh, you know, the cover up was probably worse than anything they did. And that's very alarming. But we get just slowly fed little bits of information about it. And I don't think that's really.
Yeah. It's not enough to bring him down. Really.
It's not enough. And you know, it's not I feel less concerned about that aspect of the investigation than I do about, I mean, the emoluments violations are so much more flagrant and unique to, as far as I know, to this president, that it's like, I wish that, because that to me would have been more of a, if we had like from the beginning gone like, this is very bad, that would have been more of a smoking gun, more of a kind of shit on your dick moment.
Right. big time shit on the old dick. I wonder how much of the, I don't know, like I, honestly don't know the answer to this, but the fact that it was Russia being the focus so much more than the emoluments, I wonder how much of that is just procedural things like, well, this court takes longer for cases to get prosecuted, and how much of it was you had the entire, you know, liberal media establishment trying to explain how they got the election so wrong. And so there was this kind of hope that there was like some sort of conspiracy.
I think it's the latter mixed with a little bit of Red Scare stuff. Because,
right.
I mean, you know, obviously Russia's government is corrupt, as are many, many governments. But I think that the enticement of, you know, it's what was that movie, Red Dawn? Like,
right.
It's we get to live in Red Dawn, and there's something so sexy about that for the media to go like, hey, you know, remember like how like there was hours and hours of news coverage on what's her name, the redheaded woman who
Butina.
Yeah, where it's just like that's
Butina.
So it's a very alluring topic. I mean, I find it also very like enticing, like, ooh, you know, sexy Russian spy.
Right.
You know, and like sort of the just it's such a strong meme or trope in our culture of this idea of like Russia getting in and screwing with the U.S. I think
right.
that coupled with the fact that it made it such that Democrats didn't have to take any responsibility for,
right.
You know, boning up the election potentially.
Right.
I mean, even say you assume they didn't. And it's just like that their platform was not popular or not left wing or populist enough. That's also a scary kind of realization.
So just to be clear, you're saying that you think Trump sucked off Putin.
And that Mueller's going to say that in the first sentence of this. That's the point that you're
not. Yeah. And I mean, look, if they want to suck each other off, it's
right.
none of my business.
They're going to open their kimonos. And
it's a real open the. I don't know. I have Russian ancestry and I don't even know what the series
is. Oh, say no more.
Jesus.
There we
that
are.
Explains.
And
Beth
got red hair.
Wow.
Do not pay too
Very
close attention.
Interesting.
Do not pay close attention. To Russia. It's
yes.
fine. It's fine.
I mean, I am very much looking forward to his testimony, not just because you think he's going to say that and
mm-hmm.
I'm interested now, but because I just want to hear in plain English, like everything with Mueller has been, well, because of my duty and because of this position, I cannot say this. Nice. We just high-fived. but, you know, I'm just looking forward to him saying in plain English, like, what was there, you know, what
yeah.
like if there's anything, because it does seem like there are some pretty damning things in the Mueller report, like when you like look at
the obstruction stuff
yeah. and also it's just like there's a lot of weird shit. Like when you said earlier, by the way, that it's not that abnormal for candidates to go to foreign countries to look for dirt, who else has done that?
I mean, I think the Clinton campaign contacted, was it some kind of Ukrainian intelligence, not the government itself, but some kind of like thing. I'm probably going to get pounced on in DMs because I don't actually remember the specific thing. But I think there was also a recent thing about how Obama talked to Iran before he was elected about policy. So about
we had that open mic moment where he was like, don't worry, after the election we'll straighten it out,
right which, you know,
but that's different than taking actual like
intelligence
dirt on your opponent.
It's different, but it's all, I mean, that is to me alarming, you know, to discuss, although I would say that the Iran deal was a good thing. I think that cooperation with Iran is, you know, in this specific case, it's like it's not something that I dislike, but on principle, I don't think you should be discussing foreign policy before you're elected. I think that's a very, you know, a problematic thing to do. So I think that contacting, it's like, it's almost one of the forms of corruption that I think seems to happen with enough frequency that it's like, well.
Right. It's not that shocking that somebody
yeah.
might accept a little dirt from wherever they could get it.
Right.
Right.
But what is different about this one is that they were, like, at the highest state levels, had a multifaceted campaign to mess with the election. It wasn't like you know, and try to get a specific candidate elected.
Although I think that's pretty common too. What would be uncommon, and I haven't seen the smoking gun for this, would be if the Trump campaign worked with the Russian government in a sort of quid pro quo thing of like, if you influence the election in my favor, like explicitly made this agreement, like if you influence the election by going on Facebook and doing your dumb memes, like, and in return, I'll do a good thing for you. That would be extremely bad and unusual.
Well, and that gets back to your emoluments point. You gotta know what his business interests are.
Right.
There's, you know, the Trump Tower, Moscow, and all that kind
right.
of stuff.
Right. But I don't think there is. It's been more of a thing of like, yeah, I'll take dirt on, like, you know, we would potentially want to take some dirt wherever you can get it, like you said. But I don't think that there was, and I don't think they ended up actually, like, that meeting didn't really go through. I think that the, you know, the Russia kind of like trying to influence elections with propaganda. I mean, like that's also a very common thing for.
Well, but in this one, they had the emails, the whole like coordinated thing with hacking the DNC and releasing the emails in a timed manner, and Roger, like them teasing it and knowing when it was going to happen. And like, so, all that stuff is pretty like.
So now that was, who are those emails between? That was between
John Podesta, like all those, they hacked the DNC. Well, John Podesta was Clinton's campaign manager, is that right?
Right,
and they also hacked the DNC.
Hacked.
Okay.
You're saying who hacked those emails and then talked to the Trump campaign, right? Because it wasn't somebody in Trump's inner orbit would be one of the arguments, but it was Roger Stone, right? It was Roger Stone.
I think it was Roger Stone, and then who had contacted them from Russia? Because I don't think it was
WikiLeaks.
It was WikiLeaks, right?
Yeah, there's that whole weird thing with it's a Guccifer, is the however you pronounce that, is the Russian
Guccifer?
Guccifer. probably is that.
No,
yeah.
I don't know.
Huh. And they actually did the hacking, and then they released it through WikiLeaks somehow.
Right.
And they may have done that even to get around some of the legal stuff.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, like I would certainly, I think that is concerning. I don't know if there was like a, so it was WikiLeaks working with Roger Stone is what you're saying?
Well, Roger Stone seemed to know about all these things before that. And the whole campaign, you know, there was just these little teases. They would do these teases and speeches. Of like,
right,
I got a feeling on Monday some pretty serious stuff is about to.
So it sounds like there are still some questions we have Robert Mueller.
And right, I think that those should for sure be investigated.
Open the kimonos moment.
And a real,
like
real,
we've been saying.
You know, open your kimonos and show them your b-hole moment. Yeah.
Yes, spread them, Mueller. By we mean your butt cheeks. We're going to take a quick break. And
wait. More like fuller butt cheeks instead of molar, get it?
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Fuller, Robert, fuller butt cheeks.
Right.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And it was an interesting clip that you brought to our attention, Nick. Of Tucker Carlson. Katie, here's...
Oh, yeah. Duh. I made a joke during the break. I said Tucker Carlson, more like Tugger butt open. It's a good joke.
Excuse me.
So Tucker Carlson opened his show. So he occasionally will do these monologues where you're like, wait, what show am I watching? Is this the Tucker Carlson program that I tune into every night around this time? No, but there are these clips out there where he says things like, there was one monologue where he said America's ruling class are mercenaries. He concluded with a demand for America to become a fair country, a decent country, a cohesive country, a country whose leaders don't accelerate the forces of change purely for their own profit and amusement. And basically, it was like an anti... He said, Republicans have considered it their duty to make the world safe for banking while simultaneously prosecuting ever more foreign wars, which seems like the sort of thing you would hear from a Bernie bro or, you know, somebody who is on the far left. But, you know, economic populism, like some of Trump's messaging during the 2016 campaign, was you can be on the right and on the left and still be economic populist. It's just Trump hasn't really followed through on that stuff in practice. So recently, Tucker Carlson gave another one of these monologues that we're going to play a clip from where it's not what you would expect from him.
What would the world look like now, 2.5 years later? Well, for starters, Republicans in Congress would regularly be saying things like this, quote, I'm deeply grateful for the opportunities America has given me, but the giant American corporations who control our economy don't seem to feel the same way. They certainly don't act like it. We can navigate the changes ahead if we embrace economic patriotism and make American workers our highest priority, rather than continuing to cater to the interests of companies and people with no allegiance to America. End quote. Now, let's say you regularly vote Republican. Ask yourself, what part of the statement you just heard did you disagree with? Was there a single word that seemed wrong to you? Probably not. Here's the depressing part. Nobody you voted for said that or would ever say it. Republicans in Congress can't promise to protect American industries. They wouldn't dare to do that. It might violate some principle of Austrian economics. It might make the Koch brothers mad. It might alienate the libertarian ideologues who, to this day, fund most Republican campaigns. So no, a Republican did not say that, sadly. Instead, the words you just heard are from, and brace yourself here, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. It's true.
Bomb drop. Yeah, that is from Inside the Tucker Carlson Show. That's interesting to hear him kind of complimenting Elizabeth Warren. But, you know, Nick, you were pointing out that it's not necessarily a credit to him so much as just showing there are similarities between economic populism on the left and the right, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely, like, Bernie Sanders almost got the nomination on that platform, and I think the enthusiasm that he inspired and the crowds that he drew were for similar reasons on this front to the reasons that Donald Trump drew those crowds. It's like, it's an idea of disenfranchisement. Donald Trump played to it in the shittiest possible way and the most racist possible way.
Right.
But the disenfranchisement is the point. It's like the people are, you know, if you play that theme on the left, if you play that theme more, less but in the racist way, but more in the, like, just economics way, like Bernie Sanders was doing.
The haves and the have-nots.
That's right. We're all being screwed, and we're being screwed by specifically the people who have stolen all the money and glommed it all at the top.
You mean it's not by migrant children?
It doesn't turn out to have been by migrant children.
That does seem to be the key difference that I was like, man, maybe Tucker Carlson. Oh, wait, no, he thinks migrant children should be put in cages.
Right, They're still in that weird, that, like, who knows what that's about. But there is...
I think it's about not being able to view people who are different from you as fully human.
Right, yeah. There's just, people are just crazy. But there is this overlap that's potentially encouraging for the left wing of the Democrats, is really the point. It's like, if you get to that message and you stay on that message,
right,
you will probably win.
Yeah, and that was something, we had an article where Republican strategists were talking about, like, what they thought of the Democratic candidates, and their take was all, like, it has nothing to do with policy, it's all about how authentic the person comes across. And, I mean, I think that is an important factor, but I really do think, it does seem to me that, like, there is strength in the message that, like, you're getting screwed economically.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, because you have
structure.
I mean, you have two candidates who, if you make this argument that, like, oh, identity politics is what's sort of like, well, so you have two candidates. You have Bernie Sanders and you have Joe Biden. They're both old white dudes. They're
right.
Both kind of have, I don't know if you'd call it folksy charm, but some people might.
Yeah.
I know that's weasel words, but I don't necessarily see the folksy charm, but, you know.
You're Russian, so you wouldn't really understand it.
You wouldn't get Russian folksy is more like...
Folksy charm in Russia. It is more not dying of of vodka, you know.
Of vodka.
I don't know.
I guess that is probably
a few
how.
Generations removed. Yeah. So it's you know, they're similar in terms of, I guess, like, they're obviously their personalities are different, but they're both, like, quote unquote, down to earth, old white dudes telling it how it is. But Bernie Sanders' platform is way different from Joe Biden's.
Right.
And so Bernie Sanders fans aren't necessarily, like, I suppose I haven't seen a poll on this, but I would take a educated guess that Bernie Sanders fans aren't going to go, like, oh, well, I guess I would vote for Biden in a pinch. Like, I don't think that there's overlap.
Yeah, I don't think Biden gets the tell it like it is credit, though. I think Biden is considered by, like, a standard Bernie supporter, Biden is probably considered to be more of an establishment, like, politician.
I mean,
Bernie Sanders is just seen to be, like, pure authenticity. Like, I've been saying the same thing for 50 years. I've always been a champion of this stuff. Proud socialist,
I mean,
whatever.
That's what seemed so bullshitty to me about their take, and this just seems to be the standard. I think the standard political analyst take is, Like, they have these broad platitudes, but then, like, they applied it. Like, one person was saying Buttigieg was the authentic one, and then another person was saying a different person was the authentic one. And it's just, I think maybe at a certain point, those people's political alchemy ideas held water, but now, like, we're in a new world, and they're having to just use a single point of reference in the 2016 election. Like, in the past, they could be like, well, you know, going back to the 70s, this has happened and that has happened. But they were all wrong about the 2016 election. Yeah, but so they're having to just be like, well, in the 2016 election, it was about authenticity, or that's why Trump won. And
I mean, I think there's maybe a point to that. Like, people who have been burned, like all of these people just got sort of piped by Donald Trump. So they're like,
oh, yeah, bro.
I mean, but that gives you the sort of the purest perspective, potentially. Like, you do have to explain it somehow.
You know?
Like, the fact that he flipped Obama voters famously, and that he flipped, some people were Bernie voters who voted for Trump, and all this. Like, you have to figure out how to explain that in some way, some overarching way.
Right.
People say, like, oh, it's just that everybody who voted for Donald Trump is a racist.
Yeah.
That's one overarching theory. Another is this one, that it's like has something to do with, people feel a visceral. Basically, I think if I understand what the thread is that all these people are trying to get at, you need to engage with people on some visceral, emotional level.
Right.
And I think that's not a new idea in like politics, that you have to like get to people. Like, that's why Donald Trump can, do whatever he wants and nobody, he doesn't lose any supporters, including farmers that are being actively sort of financially screwed up by his trade fights. They're right. Like, he's fighting for us. They think he's fighting for them.
But I also don't know if you can completely separate platform and policy from the visceral level. I think they're actually quite.
No.
And
sure.
I don't think you're saying that, but full disclosure, as a Bernie bro who's also clearly a Russian agent, I'm not a fanatic. I don't have heroes.
Right.
But for me, any emotional connection to a policymaker has to do with what platform they have. So if like Bernie came out tomorrow and was like, it's great that we're keeping migrant children in cages, I would hate him because like, right, that's a terrible thing to say. So it's connected to policy now. So it's like if someone else, if some other candidate other than Bernie with a different personality is saying the same things he is or similar things, like sort of like Elizabeth Warren, it's like I still feel the same kind of, I like what she's saying, or I like whatever this person is saying. Because I think that a lot of, especially younger people, are getting more cynical about like, well, just because someone acts like your friend or something doesn't mean they're actually going to do that. And I think that instead of copying the Trump model, I think it's important to kind of learn from this. Like, if you have someone who makes these big promises or says something, but they're really just kind of, playing you to get elected, I think people don't like that.
They don't want that specific plans.
That's what his weakness may turn out to be. And it may in fact be somebody like Warren who gets to be this like authenticity. She may get to be that candidate. If you have Tucker Carlson saying like, listen to what she's saying, like she's on her way already, clearly,
Yeah. And maybe I'm just tired, but I don't care if a candidate is authentic. I don't even know what that means anymore. Like, I don't know. Right. I don't know what.
Uncalculated.
I don't know what. Well, I don't even know. Like, I don't know what Elizabeth Warren truly believes. I don't know what Bernie. I mean, you can kind of guess. I mean, Bernie Sanders seems to have had a pretty consistent platform. So that's a good sign. But
I think it's a lot to do with that, frankly.
Right. I just don't. It's like, what are their intentions? Like, I just don't care what their intentions. I really care about them showing me what their policy is. Like, if a candidate says something like, well, I want to work towards, more togetherness or something, it's like, that doesn't mean anything
right to
me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I want to work towards solutions. I don't know what that means. That doesn't mean anything.
Right.
If you show me a specific platform, I mean, there's obviously always the chance that you don't follow that platform. But I think candidates
will know, right?
Right. And I think candidates often will hint, like, if you kind of go back and like litigate, Hillary's campaign, or even go back to Obama's campaign, sure, like there may have, you can actually see things in their platform that, maybe right now would be not at all agreeable to the more populist point of view. So I think that voters just really want, they want specific things in the platform that they can point to and say, like, look, I know someone who has diabetes and needs insulin, and like, and if you're telling me that you will cover that with a healthcare plan, that means something to me. That's a an actual meaningful position.
I don't know how you can get more specific than there's not a red America or blue America. There's the United States of America. I mean, that's
a real bring our buttholes together moment.
Done and dusted. Butt to butt.
I'm very cynical about Tucker Carlson, though, because I feel
what
I think. You? I mean, maybe I shouldn't be, but I mean, obviously, he's a lying weasel scumbag. It's not. It's not that. It's that I wonder, like, what whether it's like, oh, they see the writing on the wall and they see that this is the way to go now.
They're hedging.
Like,
they're gonna. I don't think it's that. I think he was his main point that he was trying to make. He's trying to shame Republicans. He's trying to say, like, where are my Republicans on this issue? Is what he's really trying to say.
I think he knows that Fox News can lead politicians in their platforms and get like, it's a weird sort of you know,
yeah, he saved us from war,
snake eating its own butthole situation.
Maybe Tucker Carlson's.
Is he
right
president?
About everything? Yeah, maybe he's president.
That's the conclusion. That
I mean, he did save us from going to war with Iran.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we talked about that, but the president said that he was locked and loaded and ready to bomb Iran. And then Tucker Carlson told him, basically,
did
was
he
like,
really?
through the TV, was like.
No, they talked on the phone, apparently.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Oh. He said that it was going to make him lose a lot of popularity,
reminded him that he ran on not doing these crazy like interventionist wars.
He's like,
that's so sickening. Just that we're like, you know, there, but by the grace of Tucker Carlson, go we. It's,
I'm happier with that than not as sickening as if they started a war
obviously.
With Iran.
Look, I will. You know, if Tucker Carlson prevents a war with Iran, I don't know. Does he need to reserve like a Nobel Peace Prize or something?
Yeah.
Hey, your word's not mine.
Yeah. He's a
We're just putting the questions out there. You're the one who's saying
right.
Well, we only have time for one more, and that we have to get this story in, guys. Charmin has put out what they're calling a forever roll of toilet paper. It's impractically huge. It looks like one of those giant wheels of cheese. But they claim it can last you a month of just near constant shitting. And it's 12 inches, the equivalent of 24 toilet paper rolls. And it's being hailed as the toilet paper roll for millennials because it cuts down on because we can't afford space.
So insulting.
You know, we all live in a box, and so you know,
I mean,
we can
do,
only
but by choice.
Right. Yeah. No, totally. But it's basically the idea that what are the two things millennials hate? They don't have any space to live in, and they hate leaving the house. This takes care of that. You have toilet paper roll that you can eat off of. It can be like your kitchen table.
I use toilet paper for what millennials do is like we kill industries and we use toilet paper for literally every purpose. So like placemats, napkins, paper towels,
engagement rings,
casts if we break our legs because we don't have health insurance.
You just wrap your arm in toilet paper and dip it in the toilet and it hardens up.
To dress up as mummies or to actually use in funerary rituals because, again, we don't have any money.
There you go. But yeah, this is...
Wait, I'm still not quite clear on the concept of what makes this toilet paper so special that millennials
collect a lot of it.
It's 24 rolls. It's
big.
It's
real big.
But they're compact or?
Nope.
No, it's just they made the biggest toilet paper roll ever.
But how's that supposed to help me with space?
Because think about how much space 24 rolls of toilet paper takes up. It's like a giant box.
Visualizing it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas 20...
This is just a giant wheel.
Yeah, it's just one wheel.
Like a cheese wheel of...
A cheese wheel of toilet paper.
Yeah, it's exactly the size of a wheel of Parmesan cheese.
I see.
Yeah.
How's that? That's not going to fit in my little toilet dispenser, toilet roll dispenser.
So that is the other genius thing, is that they're providing the toilet roll dispensers.
That's how they get you. They get you coming and going. It's like the computer. Like, here's our new Apple computer, and here's the toilet roll stick.
Right.
Wait, could you use
that? It's actually
that
on a subscription service.
I see.
So
it pays for itself. The savings, like 6 years in, you're printing. Basically,
yeah,
printing
toilet roll cloud that you have to subscribe to. That'd be really funny, like an automated toilet paper dispenser. It has the toilet paper in there, but if your subscription runs out, it's just like, and then it knows at your moment of need, and it's like, suddenly the toilet paper is now $20. Apply.
Yeah, that's how they get you, man.
Get you coming and going to the bathroom. Get it?
Uh huh. Yeah.
Jack's never going to let me on this podcast again.
I think I literally said, "What the hell is wrong with you?" during our
break. You did.
I've never seen you that angry.
I've never seen him that angry either.
Well, Katie, wish I could say it's been great having you. No, it has, as always. Where can people find you?
You can find me on the street. No, don't do that, please. I'm on Twitter at Katie Golden, and I'm also a bird on Twitter at ProBirdRights, and I have a podcast called Creature Feature, which is every Wednesday at the same places you can find this podcast.
What is it?
It's a podcast on animal and human behavior, and, you know, we're not so different after all, and sometimes animal behavior is weirdly human and human behavior is weirdly animal. And that's what we talk on. And I have a comedian on and I explain disgusting evolutionary biology facts to them and they react appropriately. And
sometimes inappropriately. And,
yeah. And then you can follow the podcast at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter, FEAT, or on Instagram at Creature Feature Pod and online at Creature Feature or just creaturefeaturepod.com.
And is there a tweet you've been enjoying?
Yeah, there is. This is by Broze, who's got it. Broze. Broze, name Esquividu. Easier names to read, guys, please. But he writes, before memes, guys used to sit around in a circle and loudly quote Anchorman at each other for literal hours.
That's true.
That is true.
That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
And now we have memes.
For me, it was like, Austin Powers.
Yeah, Simpsons for me. It was always, we had friends who said, me and my friend Chris were like, Simpsons, Seinfeld, Simpsons, Seinfeld. It was more him than me. But,
right.
Yeah, that's. Do people not do that anymore? Or are they just like, have you seen that one meme?
Yeah, I don't. I think people just send each other memes now.
Yeah, and don't talk.
Yeah, and the only time they talk, it's to say my wife.
That's right. Oh, Jesus Christ, Nick.
Jack.
Hey man, it's been great having you.
It's been really fun being here.
Do we say up top that you are one of the producers of this show and usually the engineer, oftentimes the engineer?
I don't know that we did.
Yeah.
But I haven't been around in a minute, so credit where it's due to old Danil Goodman.
DJ Danil Goodman dropping the bombs. For some reason, it was stuck at some point earlier. But there. Nick, where can people find you?
I don't do any of this stuff, I got to tell you. I just don't do it.
Yeah, that's admirable. Oh, I think you're the first person that we've ever had on the show who doesn't. is there a tweet you enjoyed or no?
I can't say that there is. I think Neil Michael Haggerty. Follow Neil Michael Haggerty on
Twitter.
Who's
that?
He's a singer.
Okay. Do you like his songs or he's a good...
Yeah, no, he's really good artist also, but his Twitter feed is good.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to follow him right now. Tweet I enjoyed, Mark McGark at Markedly tweeted, me, how do I do my taxes? Public school, shut the fuck up and square dance. you can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked
about. Footnotes!
Nice. there an echo in here? We're going to go after the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Nick, do you want to give us a song?
Sure. I got one, actually.
Woo,
I got one.
Locked and loaded. Yeah.
Is
that what he said?
He said cocked for some reason. Because he can't do anything without making it just slightly worse.
Problematic.
Song that I'd like to propose is by Kate LeBond, who's a great singer.
Okay.
And I thought Anna was doing a theatrical yawn. It's like, oh, okay. Oh, Jesus. Kate LeBond is Welsh. She's awesome. She's got a lot of good records. She has a new record called Reward, and this song is called Home to You. The whole record is good. This song is particularly a fave currently.
How you spelling that, LeBond?
L-E space B-O-N.
All right, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast. I don't know. I guess that's where some people listen to podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for today. We will be back. Oh, yeah, I forgot to say that we're going to be covering last night and tonight's Democratic debates in tomorrow's episode. So tune in for that. Talk to you then. Bye.
Home to you is a neighborhood in the night kitchen. Home to you is atrocity in the town. Home to you is an impasse of hallway ceilings. Home to you, I'm a crosshair, stubborn dream loving at its home.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.